mics are live and counting it down. 3, 2, 1. 1, 2, 1, 2. Check. All right. We're live. You ready, Mike?
Go ahead.
All right, we're back for another episode of the Hippolytics Podcast. What's up, Hippolytics?
This is number 24, right?
This is number actually 25 because I got that. You
Michael
know, we
Jordan
have that.
Plus two.
Yeah, Michael Jordan plus two because I got that hidden episode.
We talking about number 23.
Oh, that's right. You're a New Yorker.
Yeah. Right.
That's right.
We're going to get to our guests in just a second, but welcome. You have your co-host here, Mr. Cameron Trimble, a.k.a. Mr. Cameron Calvin, a.k.a. Mr. Hippolytics, a.k.a. Mr. 216 to the 202, a.k.a. Cam the Connector. And then I'm sitting across to my farthest left is my co-host.
Co-pilot.
He's feeling a little weird today because we're in his place of business in the office. Right. And we're talking to his boss. Mommy does have a job.
Right.
But we're talking to Mr. Also affectionately known as the mayor of Capitol Hill, Mr. Mike McQuarrie, Mr. Communicator in Chief. How you doing, Mike?
How you doing, Kate?
What are the names is he at?
Good to see you.
Mayor DC Noob 90, aka Mr. The Usual Suspect, aka the mayor of Capitol Hill, aka I don't know what you're doing with your hair right now, but yeah. Oh, and then lean in too. But sitting in between us, we have a super special guest audience.
Superstar.
This is for this season, well, period, for the podcast
first
this year.
Ever.
This is our first
That's
ever
what
member
I do.
Of
I'm
Congress.
The first.
The first, exactly. First member of Congress. We have Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett, delegate from the U.S. Virgin Islands.
That's right.
Hi, Congresswoman. How are you doing?
How are you guys? How's everyone?
How are you doing today? I've seen you
all day.
Well, this is my first time seeing
you,
I'm super honored.
And you're in between us and drinks, so let's make it quick.
This is going to be a special edition. Like we're recording live here with Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett. Thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks
for allowing me to be the first.
Right. Yes.
So I set the trend.
You
here,
set the
right?
you're setting Hi. The trend for
Bar
members
really
of
set
Congress.
Very high.
We've talked to a few other elected officials and politicals, but you are our first member of Congress, and
okay.
so we thank you. And thank you for sitting here and talking with us to the hip hop generation. As I mentioned, the whole point of the podcast is to kind of demystify the political process and connect the hip hop generation to the political process. You asked me a very key question. Who is the hip hop generation? I said, that's 16 to 60, because Dr. Dre is almost 60, and Lil Pump is 15.
Why do you think Dr. Dre is like the beginning? That's to me
no,
not
if
the
you want to go to Fab Five Freddy, if
oh,
you want to go.
That's okay. We could go there. I can go a little further back
go
than
further
that.
Go further back for us. Tell us who.
Melly Mel.
That's, I could go further back than that.
Let her answer.
I mean, the first time I heard rap was 1976.
Oh, wow.
On
who
the
was
bus,
that?
Eddie Chiba.
Oh, wow. In New York, right?
In New York.
You grew up
in
New York?
Yeah, Brooklyn.
Okay.
Eddie, they was in the back of the bus. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't sitting in the back of the bus.
Right.
I wasn't allowed to sit in the back of the bus. But, you know, I would look back at the interesting people that were sitting in the back of the bus. Mm-hmm. This guy had a boombox on, and he was playing Eddie Chiba.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so your love and connection to hip-hop goes back.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, my family's from the Caribbean.
Okay.
Rap music is Caribbean music.
It is.
It all started with us in the Bronx and in Brooklyn trying to hype up the crowd, get things going, talk about people, selectors, right?
Yeah.
So there you go.
Okay. Well, so you gave us a little bit of your history with the kind of with hip hop and with the generation. And you mentioned you grew up in New York. Can you explain to us what sparked you to get into public office? Coming from New York,
right.
I've read your bio, familiar with your work, but
You know, my family has always been in politics. We were not elected people to politics. You know, it's interesting now being the person who's elected because my family always felt that those were not the smart people. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's the people sitting on the couch with the notepad telling the politician what to do. Mm-hmm. The person organizing and strategizing, those were the ones that were really setting policy. My uncles, one came back from college and one came back from Vietnam. This is the beginning of Vietnam, and came back to the Virgin Islands to organize unions.
Oh, wow.
And that was really kind of the introduction to my family of really being engaged in politics, really seeing it as a mechanism to move policy and economic development and growth of yourself. But my parents lived in New York. They were older siblings that were sent to New York to send money back home. But the Virgin Islands was always considered home, even though we were living in New York, and kept that connection. Always had a heart for public service and have always done that, you know, whether coming out of law school, working as a prosecutor in New York, coming back here to Washington, working on the Hill as a staffer, being involved at the Justice Department in a political position right after September 11th. And then when I went back home to the Virgin Islands, I thought I was going to go there to relax. I was going to write a book. I've got three chapters done.
You have three chapters now?
Three chapters from a book that I started in 2005. Haven't gotten around to the rest of it because I got engaged, you know, got married, my second marriage to my husband, who was already very engaged in politics. And he was basically the person who got tired of me talking about what other people weren't doing and told me just put up or shut up. And so I had to run.
What was your first hip-hop concert you went to, and how was it? Did you sneak in or did you buy a ticket?
So, you know, I didn't go to a concert like you guys go to concerts. My first hip-hop experience was on Sedgwick Avenue in the Bronx in the early 80s. It was a somewhat friend had an index card to a party that was going to be at a community center in one of the projects up there, and we went up there, and that's how I got introduced to hip-hop.
Oh, wow.
So how about that?
Interesting. We're gonna put that in your bio.
This was back when, you know, people were still battling over equipment and stuff, and
carrying in crates.
In crates, and I had a cousin who lived with us. My parents, you know, were always complaining because not only did he have the records, you know, would get the disco versions of the records to scratch on, but did you know if you put the 45, the heavier one?
No,
not the 45. There's one that's in between that.
No, there's the 45.
Right.
And then there's the.
But if there's one that's a little heavier, if you glue that one to the disco version, it gives it a little weight. Mm-hmm. So when you spin it back, it doesn't flip as far back as you need it, so it can go just a little slower.
Have you DJed before too? Did you used to be a DJ in college? You just know a little bit.
I watch and learn.
Well, as a person who's watch and learn, and as I elected a member of Congress, and obviously you're very entrenched in the political process, but I also clearly you're very entrenched in the hip hop culture, both the history and the present. One of the prospects of hip hop and of hip politics is that hip hop is the largest genre culturally, musically, one of the most impactful cultures in the world. And we really believe, like, to get a lot of this political change that we may need to really get social justice and social action and to get some of the changes in our communities, that we really need to involve and engage both the hip-hop community, hip-hop artists, and hip-hop generation. What do you think not just the generation of people, but actually the hip-hop artists and the hip-hop community could do to really get involved in the political process, really get involved in helping move legislation, really get involved in that?
You know, I think that there are some who are engaged in that. I wish more were. I wish that they would be more organized about it. Picking one or two topics, two or three issues that are premier to the community and to the individuals that they feel they represent, and really work as a focus group to support that, whether it's through their music, through their money, through their influence with other people who are listening to their music. Think about the civil rights movement, right? It would not have gone as far if it weren't for people like, you know, Harry Belafonte others, Aretha Franklin, other artists who were willing to give their time, really put themselves on the line, put their reputations out there about what they believed, and really supporting the people who were on the front lines. I mean, it would mean so much to us as members of Congress, particularly some of the younger members, if we had artists to be able to call on to bring our message out, you know, to say the things that we're doing, to influence people to register to vote, not just to register to vote, but to actually vote in the next election. That would be enormous. That would change the dynamic of our country.
Yeah, that's one of the big things we're focused on, is to get that education to the hip-hop community, both on the artist side and the consumer and the fan side, and then also that mobilization.
Sure. That's kind of our, and it's not just about having a concert 3 weeks before an election. It's about being engaged 2 years, 3 years before the election, going out there, putting your name on events and issues, letting people know. I mean, last, what was it? I don't remember. When was it, Mike? That Taraji Henson came up to the Hill.
Oh, about 4 months ago.
Right? So mm-hmm. she came up, she lent her name to an issue that was important to her, depression and mental illness in young people. That was tremendous to have somebody of her stature here talking to members of Congress, because we listen to people like artists who have followings, who have who are passionate as artists about the things that they are talking about.
Well, we have one rapid fire question, something we have to get on the, you've been thinking about this. This is something we ask all of our guests. Top five dead or alive.
So that's your dead or alive.
That's to you.
Number five to one.
Okay. Oh, well, I can't put them in order. I got
to
put them in order.
You don't have to put them in order. He's putting too much pressure on
me.
You could just say five.
He's trying to get back at his boss.
He's after hours, yes.
Okay. Number one for me is Biggie.
Okay, we agree there.
That's the number one. You gotta talk about the lyrics of Nas.
Okay.
His wordsmith.
Nasir Jones, okay.
No, yeah. I'm a Remy. I always go with Remy.
Oh, is that the
it's
New
just
York
hardcore.
Connection?
She's a queen. She does not, cut cards with people. She tells it like it is.
She was in court today looking very nice, though.
Did she look good?
And she's been reinventing herself.
You should be able to do that. Yeah. Things bring you down, but you still rise up. Still got something to say. Okay. I respect her game.
That's a good three. Two more.
As a new person, I love Kendrick Lamar.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think he's taken it to a different place. I think you always have to reinvent hip hop, and I appreciate him for the craft that he's bringing to the art. Can we get back? Give me another question, and I'll give you the last two.
You have one more.
What's the one more question?
No, you have one more. Isn't that four artists you had? Yeah, one more.
Okay.
Well, very last question, and we'll wrap up here. You represent the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And to a lot of people, especially in this political climate that we've had, I think there's confusion on what a territory is versus what a state.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just explain to our audience what it means to represent the U.S. Virgin Islands and how that differs from representing a state?
Sure. So, in 1917, the United States purchased the Virgin Islands from Denmark. Before that, we were called the Danish West Indies. We're several islands, and they purchased us for geopolitical purposes. It was the largest land purchase per acre of anything that the United States has purchased, and that money went to Denmark. That money did not go to the people of the Virgin Islands. And that should begin to tell you the kind of relationship that we have with this country, that they entered into agreement with another country to purchase us, and it took several, maybe 10, 15 years before we then became United States citizen and had our rights. Our ancestors, when they became citizens, fought to ensure that we would be part of the draft, because Virgin Islanders wanted the responsibility along with the benefits of being an American. But there are a lot of things that we still don't have. We don't vote for president, even though we are part of the draft, even though we have one of the highest per capita deaths in the armed services, because most of our people do what they're supposed to do when called upon by this country. We do not have a full vote in the U.S. House of Representatives. We're much like D.C., where we have someone who's here, I'm here, I vote in committee, I sit on committees, I gain seniority. But when there are bills that are related to the people of the Virgin Islands, to my constituents, I can't vote on it. I can only try and get support from other members related to those things.
Well, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you for being on the podcast
okay,
today.
So don't you want my other two?
One more person.
Oh, I had one more?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, damn.
You didn't say Jay-Z?
Well, nah. Andre 3000?
Oh, wow.
Does you say Andre 3000, don't you have to bring Big Boy with him?
Nah, you know who I would say, and I know it's going to sound like, why him? I'd say Busta.
That's a good one. Busta is.
Now here's why. Because Busta Rhymes there's a strength that comes across in his lyrics, but still the ability of him to be as lyrical and utilize his mouth in the as an instrument the way he does is bar none. Maybe ludicrous.
Yeah, I would say, and actually it's something that they both have in common, but to Busta's, in addition to that, he's one of the most creative visual artists. Mm. And his, put your hands where my eyes can see, some of his videos are groundbreaking to this day. So, and then I'm a huge fan of his lyrics. He can switch his flow up. He's had some content. He's had some fun.
Yes.
A little bit of turn up, and he's lasted the test of time. So that's a good one.
You know, he's a true Caribbean man. You know, strong. He could still bring, you know, have a little fun with you, change it up a little bit. That's how we like him.
And fight.
And fight. Yes. I got to listen. If you with me, I can't be worried about you when we go into a crazy kind of place. I can't. I got to make sure you can handle yourself. You got some hands, right?
I agree. Well, Congresswoman Pleskett, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Hey, and my staff is with me. Can they come and
say
hi?
Hey, shout out to the Pleskett, Team Pleskett.
Team Pleskett is, Lewis is here. Big Angie. Angie, who's running things here in the office with the chief. The chief in the place.
Well, thank you to our first member of Congress. This is Cameron Trimble, a.k.a. Mr. Ed Politics. Michael McQuarrie signing off, and we're out.
And the peanut gallery in the back.
And we're out. Another episode. Till next week, everybody. Till next week. Peace.